106.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the BizConnect radio show with myself, Martin White. We've also got two, as always, two fabulous studio guests with us today. On my right, we have
Adrian Dante from Opus Restructuring in Maidstone.
Fantastic, Adrian, great to see you. And on my left,
hello, my name's Tim Aker, and I'm the Development Manager for the Federation of Small Businesses in Kent and Medway.
Brilliant. Good to see you as well today, Tim. Now, if you hadn't already guessed, we've got a very business-focused show lined up today. We're going to be talking around some of the kind of business pressures that are out there at the moment that businesses are facing, and the uncertainty really in terms of our kind of midterm economic prospects, if you like, in this country, but also crucially what businesses can do to kind of help themselves at the moment if they think they might be in trouble, and what organisations like the FSB, the Federation of Small Businesses, are ultimately doing on our behalf, kind of lobbying in the background as well. So as always, a packed show. Do stay with us. We're here for the next hour. But I think what we'll do now is we'll play a little bit of music and we'll be straight back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect.
The show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the BizConnect radio show today, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. As I was saying before the break, we're delighted to have two fabulous studio guests with us today. We've got Tim Aker, who is the Development Manager for the FSB in Kent and Medway. And we've also got Adrian Dante, who is a partner at Restructuring and Insolvency Specialist Opus LLP. Tim, if we can, I'd like to come to you first. Please, just for the benefit of everybody listening today, tell us a little bit about the FSB, what you guys do on a sort of fundamental level, and please give us some examples of some recent successes that you guys have had.
Well, thank you, Martin. The Federation of Small Businesses started in 1974 as a tax revolt, no less, against the taxing pressures on businesses, something that we're all feeling the pinch today. We're the biggest campaigning, lobbying and membership organisation for small businesses in the country, and I'm the development manager here in Kent and Medway. So you get the national lobbying, which is done by our wonderful team in Westminster, and we have local development managers covering the counties or combinations of counties up and down the country. So we're a grassroots, membership-led organisation, so we take our steer from our members because our members are important. 99% of businesses are small businesses, yeah. And if they don't turn up for business, then the country goes under.
Yeah.
You know, wouldn't it be funny if the small businesses went on strike this week?
Well,
the country would be a completely different place, I tell you. So I'm always
staggered by the statistics there, Tim, because I think there's around about 5.6 million and growing all the time small businesses in the UK, which is an incredible number, isn't it?
It's huge. I mean, you think of small businesses, people think of a one-person outfit, but small businesses are care homes. We're getting a lot of care homes that are joining the FSB because of the benefits with regards to HR, with regards to legal protection, legal advice, 24-hour legal hub, with regards to tax investigation cover, and a whole range of new support packages we've got, which is called FSB Care, which provides support for mental health,
which
is obviously very important, particularly if you're a small businessman with the pressures from taxes and the cost of doing business, supply chains, and just the general environment. You know, people starting up business, it can be very lonely. And what we provide there is a network, a support network, so you can get new contacts, fill your contact book in a very friendly and enjoyable way. And plus, as well, we try and add a bit of fun to the business environment as well. It shouldn't all be serious. There is some, there is a need to have some rest and relaxation and let off some steam. So we try and provide that as well. But we've been very successful. I mean, the spring statement, we've been calling for the increase in the employment allowance from £4,000 to £5,000, and the government listened to that. We'd have liked them to listen more about national insurance, but to actually provide a substantial tax cut for small businesses to offset some of the increase in national insurance, we've considered that a big win. And more locally as well, we've been working with Gravesham Council, done a fantastic job on business support, where they provided £10,000 worth of free FSB memberships, which has been a great benefit to businesses, particularly those just starting up in North Kent.
And you mentioned something in the early part of the conversation, very much around sort of hand-holding. And I, you know, I'm thinking back to sort of COVID, really. And you had a fabulous dedicated COVID website where, you know, all the latest information about, you know, the policy that was being decided at Westminster was being published in real time. So it was a great reference point for businesses to turn to in that time of need. You know, what's happening with furlough? What's happening with, you know, bounce back loans and everything else? It was a really, really important resource.
Absolutely. It was tremendous support. Mm. Thanks to our partners, of which you were one that were signposting businesses yeah. to our website so that our messages and the support and advice could get out as far as possible.
Yeah. So fundamentally then, you're a lobbying, a grassroots lobbying organisation, and you're there to help central government listen to what small business owners are telling you ultimately, and hopefully, you know, create some action around policy that's going to benefit those business owners ultimately in the long term.
Yeah, we feed the message up. I say mm-hmm. to people when they join the FSB, you can make what you want out of it. Mm. You can just sit there and take the member benefits, of yeah. which they're extensive and growing day by day. I mean, the best value for money on the marketplace is yeah. the FSB. You know, yeah. £147 starting off, and you get thousands of pounds worth of benefits. Yeah. I mean, here's one that one of our membership advisors likes to talk about, is that if you're called for jury service, you'll get £100 a day up to 15 days.
Yeah,
and that's nearly 10 times what you pay for 1 year's membership.
Yeah.
So incredible value. But yeah. we also poll our members regularly about what they want to see done. We take members to roundtables with MPs, with local authorities. We've got a few of them coming up. Mm-hmm. So that message from the grassroots goes all the way to the top of government and those that make the decisions.
Yeah, and you also take a regular sort of a barometer, a reading, mm. if you like, of small business confidence, don't you?
Yeah.
And I know you've recently published for quarter one this year what you call the Small Business Index. So just give us an overview of some of the sort of the key findings here, please, Tim.
Well, the Small Business Index, we poll and survey our members every quarter over business conditions and their business confidence. And the top line is the confidence index. So what do they see as the future, immediate future for their business? But I never take them as a standalone survey. You've always got to look at the trends. And from the end of the COVID restrictions, the so-called Freedom Day last year, confidence was up. It was at 27%, plus 27%. Then when the uncertainty started to bite towards the autumn of last year, confidence dipped to plus 12. Still in fairly good territory, considering the problems that the economy had faced over the past 2 years. Then at the end of last year, it went to zero, which was telling because of the Omicron panic. Lots of members, particularly in the hospitality and leisure industries, that were expecting a Christmas bounce to pay for the national insurance increase that was coming down the line. Mm. They were hoping for that cushion there from the Christmas sales, and that didn't come, which was heartbreaking, and that explains that. So you could see the trend. And then with the events of the first quarter of this year, with the war, with inflation going up, with taxes going up, I was expecting an absolutely catastrophic. You know, what are we looking at? Negative 20, yeah. minus 30? It's at plus 9.
Yeah.
So there is some paradox findings that I've been having discussions with members and make an interesting discussion today about how do we get... Well, what explains that? Because we see on the newspapers time and time again the constant drip, drip, drip of bad news. But when I'm telling stakeholders, politicians, that our survey says, it was like Les Dennis there, our survey says that confidence is up, it's sort of like, well, wasn't expecting that. And there are two things that come that I would like to, if we can kick open a discussion on this, is the first that the opening up from lockdown and the ending of the uncertainty that there will be another lockdown is incredibly beneficial to businesses. The freedom that to open to trade has what I feel has brought about the plus 9%, so the small increase in business confidence. But we must always be at risk of falling into the trap of talking ourselves into recession. Mm. You know, they're talking about that now, and the watching out for the two terms of negative growth, one of the most interesting phrases I think the English language has ever cropped up. Two quarters of negative growth takes us into a recession. When the confidence is there to grow and trade, you know, despite the inflation, despite the fuel tax increases, despite the energy increases, people are still creating new businesses. Mm. People are still trading. People are still filling empty shops on the high street. Small businesses are still resilient. They're still fighting.
That's the key word, isn't it? Resilience.
Mm.
And I guess when you are a small business owner, you know, what alternative have you got? You know, you either decide to, you know, pack it in and go and do something else, or you work through it ultimately.
You change
really
and
have
adapt.
A choice.
I mean, there's one business who was in cleaning materials and products, and they adapted. They had no choice but to adapt. Mm. And they changed their product from cleaning products to sanitizer.
Mm.
So they adapt and they grow and they change to circumstances. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that perhaps big business and the government should be aware of, that instead of complaining about things, let's resolve the problems, because small businesses want to get on, they want to thrive and they want to grow, and they just need the freedom to be able to do that.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I think what we'll do is that's a good time to kind of take a break. We'll play a little bit of music, but when we come back, I think we'd like to explore, and Adrian, bring you into the conversation as well, explore some of these kind of pressures that are testing the resilience of small businesses and small business owners out there at the moment. But do stay with us, and we'll be straight back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Tim Aker from the FSB and Adrian Dante from Opus Restructuring and Insolvency as our studio guests today. Before the break, Tim, we were talking about the resilience, if you like, within the small business community and economy. But I'd like to bring Adrian, if we can now, bring Adrian into the conversation to tell us a little bit about what you're seeing in the marketplace, Adrian, as a sort of restructuring and insolvency specialist. You know, are we seeing a worsening in terms of insolvencies, for example, or, you know, are we kind of staying fairly level on that front at the moment?
Yes, good afternoon. It's a strange situation at the moment. I mean, we are seeing an increase in inquiries, and what that's based around is like the servability, if you like, of the current debt or the debt legacy of these businesses, which obviously is having a huge impact on cash flow.
Mm.
What we are seeing is more pressure from trade suppliers to those businesses, rather than, they say, the lenders and HMRC. I think on those two fronts, there's a little bit of a light touch and maybe managing the situation a bit better, whereas trade suppliers that are owed money need that money,
right,
and they're making inroads to try and collect.
Uh-huh. So we're seeing, what, an increase in debtor days, for example?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, uh-huh. Absolutely.
Yeah, and there's been a sort of change, I think, hasn't there, in the legislation recently that has brought that level of creditor kind of action down to a sort of £1,500 kind of level, hasn't there, in terms of being able to...
That's right. All the COVID protection now has disappeared.
Right.
And now the businesses are now, well, not left to get on with it, but, you know, the expectations is vastly different.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, every day, you know, Tim, we read something new in the press. Last week I was reading about real wages falling, obviously, as inflation outpaces wage growth. We were talking about, or the press were talking about, a decline in the economy in terms of GDP by 0.3% in April, and a marginal kind of decline in March as well, which kind of goes back to your point about, you know, feeding into two quarters of kind of negative growth and a technical kind of recession there. What's kind of going on within the FSB in terms of lobbying government to kind of address some of these problems at the moment? You know, what can be done? I mean, you know, we've just raised interest rates again, the Bank of England, but it always seems to me to be a bit of a blunt tool, if you like, when tackling inflation, particularly against a backdrop of sort of declining growth in the economy. I mean, you know, what are some of the solutions? What are you guys lobbying for?
Oh, the interest rate increase by historical comparisons is not as blunt at all as it has been used before. Mm. I mean, there have been instances where chancellors, when they had the power, raised them 2 points in a day.
Yeah.
And this slow increase, I'm seeing more commentators say, is mainly there to keep the pound value up.
Right.
Instead of seeing the pound decline.
Mm-hmm. Because, of course, that would fuel more inflation, because we're such an import-driven economy, aren't we, these days, that I guess, you know, the weaker the pound, the more expensive, again, imports become.
And also, as well, if the high pound just can destroy manufacturing and anything we export. So there are the problems there.
Mm.
With the general tax burden as it is, you know, we're still pressing for a reduction in taxes. There needs to be a jumpstart for the economy, and incentives, and seeing that people can actually weather the coming economic storm, because let's not forget the energy price cap goes up again.
Yes.
How much more can we take of it?
Yeah.
And with the taxes going up, with fiscal drag as well, taking people into higher tax brackets, it's a lot. I mean, it really is a lot. And if this is all a part of a deflationary package, well, it's clearly not working.
Mm.
So they need to show that they're on the side of businesses. They need to bring forward tax cuts. They need to reduce the energy taxes, particularly look at VAT on fuel.
Mm.
And show businesses...
Is that being passed on, though, Tim? I mean, we had that recently with, you know, at the petrol pumps, didn't we? We had a reduction in the fuel duty there. I put petrol in my car, or diesel in my car again today, and it was up at $1.96.
Yeah, it's astonishing. That's the thing. The government have said that they're investigating whether it's been passed on.
Yeah.
But this was a duty cut that didn't really have the... It was like half-hearted.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Sticky plaster.
It was like, well, you know, it was all a headline grabber.
Yeah.
Rather than an actual thinking of like, right, we're going to really do something with VAT on fuel.
Yes.
Rather than fuel duty, look at VAT on fuel. And I couldn't understand the rationale, and maybe you gentlemen can, of saying that national insurance is going to go up, but we're going to knock one penny off income tax in a couple of years' time.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it just flummoxed me, the whole logic behind it. I don't think there is a logic to it.
Yeah.
Our top line approach is that businesses operate better when there are fewer pressures, fewer burdens in taxes and regulation.
Yeah.
And we'd like to see that.
Yeah.
And hopefully if they can do something on fuel, that would be, well, that would be muchly needed, because everyone's going to be in their cars this week because of the rail strike.
Yeah. The other thing I found quite astonishing about that interest rate rise was the attempt to sort of explain it in the context of you know, putting the brakes on consumer demand. You know, as if that was something that was responsible for sort of driving inflationary pressure. And you think, well, you know, people have to live ultimately day to day. You can't not spend money on, you know, on gas and electric and things like that. But, you know, coming out, as you say, of COVID, and a sort of 20% you know, decline in the economy, in effect, and sort of getting back to equilibrium, which is where we were, I think, pretty much at the start of the year. You know, anything that's designed to sort of suppress consumer demand for goods or products and services, you know, whether it's hospitality or, you know, a new TV, I mean, you've got to sort of question the logic in that in such a sort of fragile economy at the moment, Adrian, haven't you?
Certainly long term. I mean, probably not at the moment, but I think once it starts to feed into the into the system, then we'll see. And I think what Tim just pointed out, you know, the autumn is going to be a crucial time of the year, certainly with the utility impacts as well.
Yeah. I mean, in the news today, you know, we're reading about the rail strikes that you mentioned, and that is being brought about by, you know, that decline, as we were talking about earlier, in real wages. And, you know, people's disposable income has to keep pace with inflation, surely, to avoid falling into debt and you know, and all the other problems that kind of associated with that. And
yeah.
And businesses are no different at the end of the day, are they, Adrian? And the debt burden, as you said,
yep.
is already so high anyway.
Exactly.
You know, are businesses actually able to take on more debt at the moment and service that debt or not?
Yeah, it's going to be more difficult to borrow money as well because it's going to become so expensive.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So huge kind of challenges out there at the moment. Tim, I just wanted to talk very briefly about the labour market as well. You know, there's a lot of talk about the missing million, referring to the number of additional people that are now economically inactive, if you like. They've effectively taken themselves out of the labour market and the pressures that's causing. You know, what can be done on a sort of lobbying level to solve that problem?
I don't think we know enough yet about the direction of travel that the labour force is going to do. For instance, let's say, God forbid, there is a recession. That will mean a greater supply of labour because people will have lost their jobs, which happens in a recession.
Mm.
So I think with one of the problems of politics and decisions that made on this level is that they're rushed.
Mm.
And when they're rushed, they have unintended consequences further down the line.
No,
you know,
joke.
We have 1 million people on universal credit, not in work. Where's the incentives to get them into work?
Yeah.
We've got T-levels coming online. You know, I think that if you're going to set a skill strategy, wait until that strategy has had time to show fruit rather than trying to come up with a policy for the next 5 minutes and then another one after that, yeah. another one after that.
Yeah.
You know, to quote Corporal Jones, don't panic.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, it's definitely a time for rational thought and rational heads, absolutely. Great. Look, thanks so much for that, guys. I think what we'll do now is we'll play another music track. And when we come back, Adrian, I'd like to come over to you and understand a little bit more about Opus and specifically what you guys do in that whole restructuring and insolvency space as well. So do stay with us. We'll be straight back after this.
105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm delighted that we have two super guests in the studio with us today. We've been talking with Tim Aker, Development Manager, Kent and Medway for the FSB, and also Adrian Dante, who is a partner at Opus Restructuring and Insolvency. And Adrian, I'd like to turn to you now, if we can, please, just for the uninitiated. Tell us a little bit about what you do as an insolvency and restructuring advisor, and also you know, the Opus advisory group that you sit within, if you can, please.
Yeah, certainly. I'm based in Mason, as I said before. Opus Restructuring, we're a nationwide operation. We're 75 strong in staff, and as you've just highlighted there, Martin, we, you know, our offering is all based around restructuring, mm-hmm. but we also look at corporate finance as well. We offer that, and we offer forensic accounting as well, mm-hmm. on other areas of businesses. But obviously, our core business is insolvency and restructuring.
Right. So let's talk about that, because I want to know specifically what you do and how you help businesses that might be in trouble, Adrian.
So I'm a qualified insolvency practitioner, so I am able by law to act as a liquidator, administrator,
mm-hmm.
But what we're trying to do as well is trying to help businesses as an earlier stage as possible in restructuring, when they feel that things are getting difficult in terms of managing cash flow, mm-hmm. managing other situations in the business, that we can bring us in and we can try and navigate and help them find solutions to actually save the business in the best way possible.
Yeah, it's the old adage, isn't it? I think, Tim, that you can't see the wood for the trees, and as a business owner, you sometimes you're just too close your business and too wrapped up, perhaps at that level. If it gets to that stage in terms of trying to pay suppliers that you mentioned earlier, having them kind of knocking on the door every 5 minutes,
absolutely,
and it's difficult to see a way through, isn't it? And
absolutely.
So you need somebody else to look at it from the outside to be able to be objective about it.
Yes, that's right. I mean, it doesn't always have to end in an insolvency procedure. I mean, there are ways of restructuring a business, maybe through refinancing, looking at the cost structure, we've got identifying risks and analysing the business impact. And what we try to do is get them, the business owners, to try and understand their actual financial situation.
Yeah. And is that not something that their accountant should be doing with them as a matter of course?
It's a good point. I mean, a lot of our referrals do come from accountants, and we do find a lot of accountants are working much more closely now with their with their clients and looking at, because they've got a better understanding of things that can go wrong, and they can bring us in at a much earlier stage.
So I guess ultimately accountants can only do so much.
That's
as
right.
Well,
and
then they need to call on a specialist like yourselves.
Absolutely.
But I think the thing that always impresses me about you, Adrian, is your kind of massive network. You're incredibly well connected, and so I guess a large part of what you're able to bring to the party is that network, in terms of, look, there are possibly some solutions here.
Absolutely.
If I can connect you with this person, with that person, because I think actually this is at the heart of your problem, as it were.
Absolutely. I mean, as you probably know, our what we do and the clients that we work with is not reoccurring like they are with the accountants. We don't have a portfolio of clients per se.
Uh-huh.
But you're right in knowing other people that can help, and certainly, because sometimes I see businesses that not necessarily are in financial difficulty. Yes, they might be carrying some debt, but they can service that debt.
Yeah.
But I look at it and think, hold on a second, perhaps there's an opportunity here. Maybe look at the productivity side of the business or the operational side. And effectively, they're underperforming, that maybe their sales. So it's not always necessarily a financial situation. And there are people that can help on that side of things.
Yeah, productivity is a great example, isn't it? Because I think I love the statistic that kind of compares us to the French. In terms of the fact that, they're a third more productive than we are, and yet, they have police that go around and kick you out of your office, if you work more than 38 hours a week. But that's a great example, isn't it? And I think, businesses have got fat, if you like, on cheap labour, historically. That is the reality. Instead of investing in productivity inside their business, they've thrown bodies at, expanding their business.
Yeah.
And that might be one area that you can help rationalise, I guess.
Yeah,
fantastic. Okay, we talked sort of earlier on about the debt level that exists in the kind of the small business space. We've got bounce back loans, we've got coronavirus business interruption loans, we've got business recovery loans now as well. A lot of which wasn't necessarily policed, by the lenders in the way that it should have been. Are we starting to see some of this unravel now in the marketplace as well?
Absolutely. I don't think we're going to see the end of it for quite some years. I think it was something like 47 billion that was lent, of which 4 to 5 billion has already been written off due to fraud. And I think the business recovery loan scheme, I think that's coming to an end. I think the end of this month, I believe.
Yeah.
And that is what I'm seeing is the service, trying to service all that debt and then trying to grow the business or try to navigate out of the current the current situation,
and manage those cost increases.
Absolutely.
We had Adam Hutchison on recently from Belmont Healthcare, and he was explaining it like this. He said, "Well, imagine how difficult it is for individual households at the moment to kind of get on top of their monthly bills in terms of energy costs alone, for example, and then multiply that by 80 people, if you like, in a household, because that's the size of one of my care homes." That really kind of put it into perspective, for me, in terms of you know, a double-digit increase in costs, because, you know, the headline inflationary figure is 10%, whatever it might be, but the reality for most businesses is it's way, way higher than that. And you know, having to kind of manage your way through that and retain some level of profitability as well, when you can't just turn to your customers and say, oh, I need to increase my prices by 20% now, because that's the reality of what's happening to my kind of business inputs.
And that's what's happening, isn't it? They're just having just to increase prices. Every time you seem to go anywhere, the cost seems to go up.
Yeah. I mean, you'd be sort of adjusting your price list almost sort of weekly at the moment, wouldn't you, I think, to kind of take
absolutely, right.
Of some of that. So what are you seeing in terms of, you know, businesses that are coming to you? Where do you think the kind of the pressure point is, and what's the kind of, you know, what are the answers?
What are the answers? I think solutions might be I use one example. I'm looking at helping a construction company at the moment,
right.
10 million turnover. I won't go into the background of it, but what we're trying to do is put together a what we call company voluntary arrangement, which you may have come across the term before. It's a compromise between the company and its creditors. And what we're doing as well is we're building in some refinance as well. So we're showing the creditors, in particular HMRC, what the business can do differently going forward. Mm-hmm. It's got a good order book. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's profit margins that have suffered, but they're rewriting their business plan. Mm. They're introducing new capital, and we're hoping that a repayment proposal around about 50p in the pound,
right,
will be accepted. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we think that the trade suppliers will. Will it's not a case of it's either that or nothing. It's got to be an honest proposal that, you know, of course, if it doesn't go through, then obviously they have to look at another option of whether it's an administration or liquidation, right, which is the last resort.
Okay, so in the first instance, you're looking at trying to help the business survive as a going concern.
Correct.
But that means you've got to sit around the table with creditors and say, guys, you know, we can't service this level of debt that we have with you at the moment, but what we would like to do is propose a compromise that will enable you to kind of come out with something and us to kind of carry on as well.
I think that's right. I mean, if you take, you know, the old phrase of like, we're all in it together. I think now more than ever, all stakeholders really now need to come together, you know, and there's got to be, you know, it's got to be an honest conversation, and there's got to be a bit of compromise on both sides to actually to navigate a way through.
Yeah.
That is the reality of it, and that is where we come in to try and help facilitate that, if you like.
And just open the business owner's eyes to the fact that, look, there is a real issue here, and it needs to be addressed.
Absolutely.
Now it can't go on anymore.
Correct. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to get difficult as time goes on, but let's say, you know, we just keep trying to raise the awareness of what we do as a profession.
And the earlier you have the conversation, the easier it is ultimately, I guess. Yeah. Okay, brilliant. Again, I think we're going to take a break there. We're going to play a bit of music. And when we come back, Adrian, I'd like to understand what some of the warning signs might be that businesses need to kind of be aware of and maybe use as a sort of flag to put their hand up and ask for help. So,
okay.
Do stay with us, and we'll be straight back after this bit of music.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect. The show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody, to the final part of the BizConnect radio show today. Before the break, we were talking with Adrian Dante from Opus Restructuring and Insolvency about his specialist role as an insolvency and restructuring advisor. What I'd like to do, Adrian, if we can now, is focus in on some of the kind of the warning signs, if you like, that business owners should be aware of in terms of their business perhaps about to become insolvent, or it might indeed already be insolvent. What's the kind of the acid test there, if you like, that people need to kind of look out for?
Well, obviously there's two acid tests in terms of insolvency. The first one is on a balance sheet basis. Do the liabilities exceed the assets? But more commonly, really, what we're finding is paying liabilities as and when they fall due. That is what I'm seeing at the moment. And this all centres around cash flow and the pressures on cash flow.
Right. So in terms of good business practice, then, as a minimum, you must have a rolling cash flow forecast
absolutely.
In your business.
Absolutely, regular reviews.
Uh-huh. And that would be, what, a three-month rolling forecast?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's probably mm-hmm. bare minimum. It's difficult in the current climate, yeah. you know, because it's hard to predict yes. what's around the corner, but certainly 3 months, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that's really good discipline as well, isn't it? Because, you know, if it then forces you to look at things like, you know, energy costs, for example, yeah. and what's kind of coming down the pipe in terms of those increases, because, you know, the more businesses get squeezed, ultimately, the more margin gets squeezed.
Absolutely.
And it's that squeezing of the margin, yeah, yeah. ultimately, that is the kind of the key thing at play here, isn't it, in
correct.
Many ways?
Absolutely. It all centres around the cash flow,
yeah.
and you know, and if businesses can just stay on top of their numbers, they'd yeah. be able to make decisions at an earlier stage, as we were highlighting earlier.
Mm, mm, fantastic. Okay, so if the worst comes to the worst, AD, having spoken to yourself, and I do need to think about, you know, liquidating mm. my business. There's three kind of ways to do that effectively, aren't there? There's something called a creditor's voluntary liquidation, which I think is almost what you were describing earlier in terms of sitting down with your creditors and agreeing, you know, a way forward there. There's a compulsory liquidation, obviously, which perhaps is a bit more severe. But then,
yeah.
I guess you've got business owners that just want to close their business. They've had enough. I want out.
That's a good point.
I'm solvent and I'm gone. You
well,
know?
This might kind of like be having an impact on why there's less people work. Because we've done quite a lot of these members' voluntary liquidations, mm. which are solvent liquidations.
Yeah.
And business owners in that sector have gone, I think I'm going to retire. I've got X amount in the bank. I own my own house. So I think I'm just going to
yeah.
close the business up.
Yeah.
I can do a members voluntary, which is the most tax efficient way
yeah.
To exit your business. And we've seen a lot of that over the last 12 months. I mean, just touching on the other two there, the creditors voluntary liquidation, which appears to be the most popular the most used at the moment, because that gives the directors a clean exit out of the business.
Exactly.
Compulsory is construed as a hostile
yes.
procedure, because that's instigated by a creditor when they issue a winding up petition.
Yeah.
And we're probably going to see an increase in winding up orders being made over the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah. But in the first instance, again, you know, always best to, you know, sit down with your creditors,
absolutely.
Have a conversation,
absolutely.
Help them understand.
Communication is actually key. I was thinking about it earlier. I think, you know, our directors under enough pressure at the moment. We're not seeing. I mean, there is obviously pressure from trade creditors, as we pointed out, but the pressure from lenders and HMRC might be a bit further down the line. So this is the time now.
Yeah.
As well, we keep saying it, but this is the time now, just to sort of have the conversation with your professional advisor, whether that's, you know, whether that's the accountant, who can then seek some specialist advice from an insolvency practitioner.
Mm, mm, absolutely. And going back to what we were talking about in terms of this stress test.
Yeah.
I know this is something that you actually offer free of charge in the first instance to,
yeah.
to business owners, isn't it? So,
that's right.
You know, I'm a business owner. I'm concerned about my short-term ability to
yep.
pay my creditors, my suppliers, for example. I'm not sure if that's ultimately going to be a long-term issue
correct.
In my business based on my cash flow forecast and my kind of cost inputs, if you like. You know, can I get some impartial, objective advice? And you're prepared to offer an hour of your time
absolutely.
To actually help a business owner understand that dynamic.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that we offer a no obligation free consultation, and that really helps business owners and directors, because there's so much going on in their mind
yeah.
that they can't really find a way forward. But we can offer some solutions, and
yeah.
And it's amazing. Just like when directors say, actually, I feel much better now.
Yeah.
I've spoken to somebody,
yeah.
and now I've got a clear idea what to do.
Yeah. So what would I need to bring to the table there, Adrian? What in terms of preparing for that?
Yeah, I need
that,
to see
that meeting.
Yeah,
some financial.
Yeah,
forecasts?
Financial. The mm-hmm. most latest financial information that you've got to hand.
Yeah.
Obviously, the list of creditors. creditors. You know, even like if you've done a cash flow or a P&L forecast,
yes,
that would be useful as well.
Yeah.
But we can just sit and just an understanding of what's happening with the business and how you see it.
Yeah, because I mean the advantage of that you bring to the table obviously is, you know, you talked about forensic accounting earlier on. You'll look at that P&L, you'll look at that cash flow, and it'll jump out immediately to you, won't it, in terms of where the problems are.
I mean, directors, of course, you know, they've got to be aware of their responsibilities. And of course, I think you touched on it earlier, you know, about bounce back loans, which is a really hot topic at the moment, yes, in terms of how they've been used and abused. And you know, and I think the powers that be are making examples of directors that have fraudulently taken these BBLs. So it's really important in that front as well.
Okay, fantastic. So how do we get in touch, Adrian? That's, you know, that's the bottom line. How do we get in touch with you and say, look, I'm not sure, might have a problem, really appreciate a
second pair of eyes. Drop me an email, and you can find me on the website, adrian.dante@opusllp.com, based in Maidstone, and always happy to talk to business owners and directors without the concerns they have.
So the website is opusllp.com?
Yep, that's it.
Fantastic, good. And Tim, we didn't talk about FSB details either, in terms of, you know, inquiring about membership perhaps, and you know, some of the kind of the benefits that you were talking about. What's the best way to get in touch with the FSB?
If you're looking at membership, contact a membership advisor or come to me. My details are on the website, but you can find me on LinkedIn. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook and so on. But if direct email, tim.aker@fsb.org.uk.
Fantastic.
We've got army of membership advisors happy to go through all the membership benefits. But as well, one big benefit is you are part of a massive small business community where you can meet people like Adrian, meet people like yourself, Martin.
I'm actually a member.
Yeah, come along.
Be encouraged.
Come along to a networking and inquire.
And it's to know that you're not alone. It can be a lonely business, and you're not alone. There is the support network there. That can provide those insights that Adrian was talking about.
Fantastic. Guys, we've come to the end of the show today. Thank you so much to our listeners for tuning in. Hopefully there were some nuggets there in terms of information that you can take away and perhaps, apply in your own business, whether it's, you know, thinking about FSB membership and some of the benefits that brings, or perhaps, you know, starting a conversation with someone like Adrian to kind of kickstart the future of your business in many ways, if you like. So thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Tim, for joining us as well.
Pleasure.
And Adrian,
pleasure as well.
Great to have you in the studio. We will be back in 2 weeks' time when our guest will actually be Joe James, who is the Chief Executive of the Kent Invicta Chamber of Commerce. So join us again in a couple of weeks. But for now, it's goodbye.